Welcome to Impulse Kitty Productions' digital film podcast, where we discuss everything and anything in the digital film world, which includes television shows, Blu-rays, the latest electronics, anything and everything to do with digital or film. So kick back, relax for the next hour or so, and enjoy Impulse Kitty Productions' digital film podcast. Welcome to IKP's digital film podcast with, well, my name's Ruben.
And mine's Sherry.
And today we're covering a couple of different subjects. One is The Hobbit's 48 frames a second, well, high frame rate controversy, which we both got a chance to see. You got to see it more than I did.
Yeah.
So we'll get into that. We'll also be reviewing the Finding Nemo 3D Blu-ray and Pitch Perfect Blu-ray and Resident Evil Retribution 3D Blu-ray, as well as we're going to start off with the kind of a review of the Panasonic Viera TC-P65 VT50 65-inch plasma TV. And we'll also kind of update people. We were going to do a video in January, and we were going to finally get started on this video, and kind of in my last podcast, I said I was trying to get the websites up and running and whatnot, but unfortunately you had a accident recently.
Yes, I did.
So why don't you let the listeners know what happened on your way home from work one night?
It was on the 9th of one night on my way home. I was driving, and there's a certain area on the highway where I take on the way home, and you turn the corner and you can't see right away until you turn. And when I turned the corner, this girl was across the lane, and I had to slam on my brakes, and I ended up hitting her anyway because it slid me right into her. So I got into an accident with my car and totaled my car and
last time this happened, it wasn't your fault. Like, these two times weren't your fault. Last time, this commercial driver hit you, and
he cut me off across two lanes. He wasn't paying attention, crossed two lanes and cut me off.
So this is the second. In fact, the first time it was kind of fucked up in a way because it was the let me just check the timer here. We'll make sure we're doing right. It was our first car, and we had one payment left to make it our own.
Before it was our own,
and it was a complete loss. And then we had a kind of, you know, with insurance, you can only get so much back, and you know, we did get a settlement out of it, but that mainly went towards medical bills and you know, just kind of recuperating monetarily where we were at pre-accident.
Yeah.
So now this, back in order. Yeah, now this accident kind of put a delay, but also at the same time kind of made you like, okay, we have an in-between car right now where, you know, when you got to get around, especially if you live in Florida, anybody that lives in
you got to be able to drive to get around,
yeah,
especially the area we live in. It's not like there's a lot of transportation.
So. Yeah, it's not like if you live in Cali where there's bus stop every 5-10 minutes. Yeah, or, you know, in Florida, things are much more spread out and the highways, and it just makes things very difficult if you don't have a car.
Yeah.
So we had to kind of just really quick get into the most cheapest thing we could find until we can save up the proper amount of money for your dream car. And I think what happened here was that, in a way, I tell Sherry that it was serendipitous that, you know, she was paying through the nose a little bit.
I was paying too much for the car I had, and it wasn't worth the
price. The car you had was a Kia Spectra 2006. And her dream car is anywhere from a 2010 to a 2000, 12
Dodge Challenger.
Dodge Challenger, preferably with a
The
Hemi.
Hemi, yes.
The dream would be the SRT. So you're kind of right now in an in-between car. We won't really mention what car because it's a little,
It's a
sad.
good car.
It's a
It's
good car,
just.
but it's an in-between car with really low payments. That's something what we wanted to get into right away and trade up as soon as we got the deposit for your dream car. Because I figured, along with what I was talking about the last podcast about the good enough attitude being gone from our vocabulary, where we don't want to be good enough. And
Yeah, I'm finally gonna get this car because I mean, the first time, this is what I was doing is that, I was making payments on that one car and I was about to be having it paid off. So instead of, not being able to do that, I was gonna take all that money that I would normally pay for the car each month and put it aside. And I was gonna spend the entire year not making payments on a car. And then the next year, I would have two cars. So I'd have the one car that I paid off. Plus my Challenger, but that didn't work. So
So now you're going straight,
now I'm just going straight for it,
straight
yeah.
Challenger. But she's a little banged up. She's suffering, and like I said, anybody that has an accident would know it's like you don't walk away from it without. So with the choreography, we're getting back into it. You're kind of able to do it. The January set time for the video, we still want to hit it. It might be towards the end of January, but things being the way they are, I'm really hoping to at least get it done before
I don't want to
March. I
pass
don't want yeah, I
February.
don't want him past February. But anyway, so that's a little bit of an update on where we're at in the video. But what we're going to talk about right now is the Panasonic Viera TC P65 VT50 65-inch Panasonic Plasma 3D Full HD television. Now, the reason I'm talking about this is because this plasma was this television, actually, the VT50, was named the
Number one TV for
For
2012.
2012. And I'm as an editor, or I'm a director for first and foremost. I want to get that out there. I have to be an editor and a DI colorist. We both do out of necessity because we don't have people.
Although I like being a colorist, though.
Yeah, Sherry has more interest in learning more about being a
Color
DI colorist.
grading, yeah.
In fact, we've been dabbling in DaVinci Resolve recently, which I gotta say is really it's more intuitive than I thought it would be. I thought it would be harder to learn,
Yeah.
and the workflow is really. I mean, if you've ever worked with, I mean, if you go to DaVinci Resolve, go to Blackmagic's website and download. I mean, they have DaVinci Resolve Lite for free. You're missing a couple of perks. If you go for the full version, you get all the perks. It's about $1,000. You could also buy the Blackmagic Cinema Camera for $3,000, and it comes with Ultrascopes and DaVinci Resolve.
Yeah.
But anyway, so getting back to, I'm a director at Form first and foremost. That's what I want to be doing. And I edit. And color
We do everything because it's
and
just
sound,
us, but
out of necessity.
if you had your choice, that's what you mainly be doing.
But as a videophile, I always strive for perfection. I'm a perfectionist when it comes to like color or
Yeah.
accuracy, or watching things as the director intended you to. So I guess this episode is about watching things as the director intended you to, which will spill over into the 48 frames a second kind of
Right.
thing. So this plasma, I got a chance to actually review it. I got a chance to play with it, dig into some of the menu features, some of the presets, because I'm very interested in calibrations much more recently. I've always been interested in having content being displayed as it should be displayed, not as you want it to be displayed.
Right.
Which is, there's a big difference between watching something as the director and editor and colorist and everybody intended you to watch it than the way some people watch their televisions.
Yeah, like I'd like to have the option, but when you first go see it, you should always
Well, we're talking about the plasma thing right now.
like, okay.
Okay, yeah. We'll get into that. I know she wants to get into the 48 frames a
Yeah.
second. But this plasma, yeah, if you have a lot of people, go for LCD, LED, and definitely go for those TVs. If you have a bright room and whatnot, those are probably going to respond the best. But if you are a videophile and you have a chance to check out I would say the Samsung 65-inch 8000 plasma and the Panasonic VT50 65-inch are the two top end plasmas.
Yeah.
And what plasmas do that makes, pictures quality really good and far superior than LCDs, for one, it's the wide angle viewing, where anybody that's owned an LED, edge lit LED or LCD knows that, the sweet spot is the center,
Yeah.
and you're gonna get the best colors, the best contrast. As soon as you start moving a little bit off angle, you start washing out the picture. You're really not, it kind of sucks for the people that have to sit on the sides
Yeah.
of the TV. Now, this TV, I'm never about presets. Never.
No,
I'm all about
not even I.
calibration. And so much so that I've been looking into being an ISF certified calibrator. I have a ISF professional coming out on the 12th to calibrate my television, and he's gonna kind of walk me through what he does. If you have a chance, go ahead and check out the SpectraCal's website. They have a Calman software for calibration. Like the i1 Pro color meter and whatnot. It's a whole process. It's like you literally connect the software, and it's like a puck you put on the television. You measure, the 10-point, white balance or grayscale, and the colors, and you get everything kind of dialed in to from the gamma luminance to the RGB balance and so on and so forth. So you pretty much dial in the TV as good as you can. And the Panasonic caught my eye because it was rated like, the 2012 what you may call it, best TV of 2012.
Yeah.
Now, the ISF is the Imaging Science Foundation, so you have to go through a certain course and pass, to be certified as an ISF
Right.
calibrator, and that's what I'm looking forward to doing, because I think with Impulse Kitty Productions, I think we offer, obviously we're going to be offering, video production at affordable prices with
Right.
a high quality resolution. And that's also something we could offer is professional calibration. And I'm gonna say it right now, you people that say, okay, well, I can get, a Best Buy person to calibrate, that calibration, a true calibration of a television should take anywhere from 90 minutes to 7 hours.
Yeah.
It's not taken lightly. The problem with Best Buy's calibrators, they come in and they have to be out within 2 hours. And most of the time they just use a, they just kind of adjust the white balance. They go into the service menu, they just turn on the calibration day and night mode, and they just kind of mess with the white balance, and then they're done. Now,
Yeah.
that gets you halfway there, but by no means is it dialed into near perfection. In terms of what that was done, you could do it yourself. Now, if you're gonna spend $3,000, 2,000, even $1,000 on a TV, our recommendation
Yeah.
is spend the money, find your local ISF calibrator. There's a list of them. Go to the ISF website, or the AVS website, and find an ISF caliber certified calibrator. He'll
Yeah.
charge about $300 to $600, depending on travel fees or whatnot. If he's close by you, it's pretty much a $300 job,
The traveling
but it's a
fee.
really good job, and that's what I'm looking into be certified to offer. But anyway, getting back into the TV, it was amazing. They have a T. It's a THX certified television, and like I said, I'm not
Which is nice.
presets
Yeah.
at all, but especially for a plasma, the break-in period is usually about 100 to 300 hours before you want to start watching 235 one letterbox stuff or stuff with static logos on it,
Yeah.
because you get that image retention, a possible image retention, which is less of a chance with plasmas nowadays than they were, 6 years ago.
Right.
It's hard to kind of burn in or burn in. That's why people are. But if you're a videophile, you have a darkened environment, plasma is the way to go. Wide angle viewings, you don't get that washed out picture. The blacks are very inky and dark. The contrast level is beautiful.
Yeah.
It's just a superior television in terms of performance and the way things it's if you have it properly calibrated, a plasma will produce a picture as closest to you the way you saw it in the theater. That being said, I put it on. I tested out these, because I tested out a couple of the presets that it had, and I had the vivid mode, the custom mode, and
Yeah.
all that stuff. But as soon as I put in the THX preset, which is a THX bright and dark room, and a 3D THX mode, man, the colors were like really good,
Super good for a
spot on.
preset.
The picture was, it felt the warmth of the picture felt that it was around the 6500
Yeah.
Kelvin where it should be. That's a lot of people have a problem with, like, the picture looks too warm and it
Yeah.
looks too orangey. It's like, people that don't understand the way content is supposed to be displayed, television should be outputting the color temperature about 6500 degrees Kelvin. That's pretty much the standard. Whether you find that, I hate people that put it in blue mode, like cool, like really
Oh,
cool,
yeah.
and it looks all bluey and shit. But the THX mode to get you in through that break-in period, I think, is really great. Definitely going to be using the THX mode when we get ours. Yes, we're going to take the plunge. Not right away. We're definitely going to save up for it because it's about a $3,000 television.
Yeah.
But we're videophiles. We get a good AVR receiver with a good Blu-ray player, and we listen to to stuff. I mean, we have two tower speakers, huge Polk Audio center speaker, and two bookshelves on the back. A complete 5.1 surround sound system, and we
Yeah.
usually listen to it about reference level, which is about 85 dB decibels, which is pretty fucking loud. It's not for everybody, but there is a reference level where you should be listening to stuff to accurately listen to it the way the director
Yeah.
intended you to, or the composer. Now, I was blown away. This TV's black levels, the dynamic range, even just the preset, the amount of control you have, the 10-point white balance that you can do, and it's also got this ISF CC a service menu where you can kind of connect it to the Calman software from SpectraCal and get a AutoCal white balance, and then that saves you a lot of time, and it can pretty much get dialed into near perfection. That or the Samsung E8000 plasma 65 inch can both be dialed into
Oh,
near
yeah.
perfection. I think the Samsung offers more apps. It comes with a
Yeah.
built-in camera for Skype. I mean, if you're looking for a TV with a bunch of apps and good picture performance, go with the
Yep.
Samsung E8000 65 inch. You'll be happy.
If you're
But
more simplistic,
if
then.
you're more, yeah, more a minimalistic, if you're just straight picture quality, video content, the Panasonic VT50 cannot be beat. In my terms, it is one of the best displays that I have ever seen. Even the 3D, I was a little skeptical because there's, some wonky reviews about, a lot of crosstalk and ghosting of 3D. I will say that Samsung does produce a much, I would say, sharper and less crosstalk image in terms of 3D. But when I tried on the 3D glasses for the Panasonic, we were watching The Avengers, and I was blown
Jumping
away.
back,
I actually jumped back for a second because it was just so immersive.
yeah, it was really
The
good.
I didn't see really that many anomalies, to tell you the truth. Not so much that I would nitpick. It's by no means a like I'm not gonna like choose the Samsung over the Panasonic just because of that. I mean, the 2D image especially. I know there's a lot of people that don't like 3D, but getting back to the 2D image, it was amazing, right? I
It
mean,
was amazing.
the flesh tones, and the preset, the THX preset, it's fine. But I recommend, like I said, if you're gonna spend three anywhere from a grand to on up to any television, have it professionally calibrated. And at least if you don't want to spend, the calibration money, and don't one of the biggest things is like Best Buy is about $200 for the calibration. That calibration can actually be done by you. So I recommend Disney's Wow calibration
That
disc.
one's
Google
good.
that. It's Disney's Wow calibration disc. Or if you're a little bit more experienced and know exactly what a picture should look like, Spears and Munsell benchmark Blu-ray. Highly recommended. So at least spend $20 to $30 on a calibration
At
disc
least.
and get your TV to eye comfortable levels. Don't have it blasting your fucking eyes in vivid mode. The problem with vivid mode is that it's meant to be combating the fluorescent lights in the showroom of the floor, and it's meant to attract you, with the brightness. But if you sit at home, especially at night, and you have the fucking TV on vivid mode, which I know a lot of people that do this, and they're like, wow, the colors look so bright. And then like after like a 2-hour movie, they're wondering why they have headaches and why their like eyes hurt. It's because you're like blasting the TV's light output to an unreasonable, and the contrast is you're crushing the blacks, you're destroying all the information. So your TV automatically becomes this almost worthless. You're not reaching the potential of the television. And I think that you need to calibrate. Please calibrate. Please calibrate your TV. If you're spending
It's
that
worth
much
it.
money, watch. I know it looks a little odd to people at first, especially the people that don't know what to look for in terms of content, the way it should be displayed. But especially if you're in a dark room, turn down the backlight. The backlight will not affect the contrast, the color, or anything. It'll just affect the light output. And turn down that backlight. Not only will you save money, but your eyes, once they dark adjust, you will see better contrast detail. Your pupils will expand, and you will less eye strain. So, in terms of plasma, like I said, it was beautiful.
Yeah,
And I
it was.
recommend if you can pick up the VT50,
Go for it.
pick it up. The E8000, same thing for the Samsung. So, I would recommend the 60. It's a 64-inch for the E8000, and it's a 65-inch for the VT50 Panasonic. And have it calibrated, or at least $30 for Disney's Wow
You
calibration
do it
disc
yourself. I
or
mean,
Spears and Munsell.
they didn't make it for where pretty much anybody could do it themselves.
Yeah, so once again, if you have it on vivid mode, you're watching it the way you want to watch it. And especially if you have that 120 hertz, 240 hertz interpolation kind of motion smoothing soap opera effect going on, and you're a fan of that, that's all good and whatnot. But when you're watching something that's supposed to be displayed at 24 frames a second, you're ruining that content. Turn that shit off. Now, if you already have the VT50 and you don't know, if you your most Blu-rays displayers spit out a 24 true 24p mode via the HDMI, and the TV can do a multiple of 48, 60, and 96 hertz for the television. Even the Samsung E8000 can do a 96 hertz mode. And what effectively is that when you're watching any 24p content, you wanna crank that to 96 hertz. On each display, it's different. For the Samsung, it's under the mode Cinema Smooth. Now, it's not the same as the motion flow smoothness. What it does is that it causes less flicker and more to what you saw in the theater at 24. It's much smoother, less judder. Once again, closer to what you saw in the theater. So make sure you, if you're watching 24p, crank it at 96 hertz. And if you're watching 3D, put it at 48 hertz. And you should be good. 60 hertz, obviously, if you have an Apple TV, that go to 60 hertz, because that's, but 24p content out of a Blu-ray, you should have 96 hertz. You get the best performance out of it, and 48 hertz if you're watching true 3D. But yeah, beautiful display. I will definitely give a full review when I get it. It could be sometime in February when the sales, start, and the new TVs start coming out and whatnot. But I'm looking for the optimum sale. But definitely plasma. I can't wait to get it. I can't wait to get my 55-inch Samsung LED calibrated coming
Yeah,
soon,
that's
like
gonna be
by a
exciting.
professional ISF calibrator. Like I said, it's exciting. And not only to be able to, he told me that I could look over his shoulder, and even Faith, my daughter, was in here for 10 hours straight. We were doing the Disney Wow calibration disc, and with calibration, you're like, when the fucking 10 hours, 7 hours? Why does it take so long? It's because you have to. There's so much in the display, especially the more premium displays offer much more calibration tools, like the 10-point white balance and more arcane in the service menu stuff. And you have to look at source content, like something you're familiar with. Like we were playing The Dark Knight Rises back and forth, where it's like, okay, how's the dynamic range look? And then we would go back to the calibration disc. We would, calibrate it, have the contrast levels close we can, the color temperature. And there's only so much you can do. It'll get you halfway there with the calibration disc. But like I said, if you have a person, what they do is they plug into the TV via the Ethernet or wireless through the IP, and they can control the TV depending on what kind of television. And they can, they, like I said, they have a professional meter that hooks onto your TV, and it measures the colors, the red, green, blues. It gets them everything, the sharpness. They adjust everything, and it takes a period of time to get your TV to the right, and give it a week. It may seem a little dull and low, but after a week, definitely watch it calibrated, and then flip it over after a week to vivid mode, and you'll be like, what the fuck is this? Because once you have it on the proper settings, you should be able to see a ton of shadow detail. Black should be black,
Black.
reds should be reds, flesh tones should be presented
Everything should
accurately.
look the way it should look.
So, all right, so we talked enough about that. Let's move on to the 48 frames a second high frame rate, The Hobbit: An Unexpected Journey. And it was an unexpected journey.
Unexpected.
Okay, first of all, I didn't get a chance to see it on opening night. Neither did Sherry. We kind of just waited a little bit. She went with two of our friends, Terry and Olden, and she got a chance to see the high frame rate in 3D, the way it was supposed to be seen. Now, Peter Jackson, for those of you that don't know, normal movies are shot since the fucking 20s, for about 90 years now,
Yeah.
24 frames a second. Now, the 24 frames a second wasn't chosen for any artistic purpose, but more for monetary purposes, to incorporate sound. Anyway, but it's been the standard for cinema to record something at a multiple of 24 frames a second
Right.
and project it at that frame rate. So you get the blurring, a certain amount of judder, but that blurring and judder, I think, helps assist in hiding certain things to make things look more real. I know it sounds counterintuitive what I'm saying, but that blur is there for a reason. Shake your hand in front of your face for a couple seconds and it's not going to look super clear. There's a certain amount of blur which makes it feel more real. But Peter Jackson shot it with RED cameras at 4K, which is four times the resolution of 1080p, which is about 4096, about 2160 resolution. It's supposed to 1920 by 1080, and 48 frames a second, which is double the frame rate. Which his consensus was, a lot of people have trouble with 3D. They get headaches and whatnot, and that he attributed to motion blur and judder. So effectively, at shooting a higher frame rate, you would eliminate more of the motion blur and judder, and supposedly have a more aesthetically pleasing 3D experience with less eye strain. So, what was your experience? How did you feel about watching it when you
It
started
threw
watching
me
it?
off so much, like it that the 48 frames like took me out of the story for The Hobbit. It was like so distracting because it's you're watching this movie where these people have prosthetics on and they're on these sets and everything, and you want to kind of hide certain things to make it like a story, involve you in the story, and it was too much, too much. And then,
So it detracted you from enjoying it.
yeah, it took me away from enjoying
Now,
the
was
movie.
it okay? Well, let's get into my review real quick. This is history in the making. I've never walked out of a movie in my entire life, out of a movie theater. Yeah, because you pay a lot of money. I gotta say, look, I went in with an open mind. I'm that type of person. See it as the director intended you to see it,
Yes.
whether you like it or not, because art at the end of the day is subjective. And some people like fish, some people don't like fish. It's kind of the same
Right.
thing, more or less. So this high frame rate, to me, the controversy sounded a little ridiculous because a lot of people were saying it's new and innovative. Well, it's not new and innovative. High frame rate has been around for a very long time. High
Yeah.
frame rates are usually associated with soap operas, reality TV shows like American Idol, The Kardashians, or whatever kind of
Yeah.
show that, so you're conditioned to watch at high frame rates. And homemade video cameras have about 60 frames a second. For the longest time. So essentially anything that was shot in high frame rate was usually considered to be more on the low end of the spectrum. Like television was cheaper, I guess it was the word to say, which is fine. We've been conditioned to associate high frame rate with made for TV movies
Right.
or made for TV specials or reality TV. So that didn't translate well to a big budget movie, would you say?
No, it didn't.
So, okay, it started. I saw the MGM logo, and it looked no more different than the motion smoothing that your average television now has. So I was kind of like, okay, this is fine. And the first shot of Bilbo, he's walking, and I don't know what the fuck is going on, but it looked like he was in Fast Forward. Like
Yeah.
it's some sort of Benny Hill or Charlie Chaplin kind of shit where,
Yeah.
it's Fast Forward. It's in sync with the sound and everything, but he's like fucking walking like he's on crack.
Yeah, seriously.
And you add that with 3D and the 48 frames a second, it looks really real. So there's the aspect where it looks kind of cool, but I think that what happened was, as the movie went on for about 10 minutes, it started doing, the sweeping pans, and doing these, I had to take my glasses off because it was just fucking too much. I felt like my eyes were gonna roll in the back of my head. And that was weird because I'm a big fan of 3D. I'm a big adopter of new technology. So it was, I had to walk out. I was like, I can't watch this. Because, and it was literally like, I wanted to, I went down, I paid my
I
money,
tried, yeah.
and I couldn't. And even the second time, you got motion sickness,
Yeah, I
right?
don't know how I did it the first time, but the second time I went in, it was just, I felt like I was on Spider-Man at Universal, and I can't do that right because I get motion sickness on it, and I never get motion sickness with 3D. So this one like really threw me off. I couldn't do it.
So the problem to me was that I don't know, it was weird. It's hard to describe. As a point of distraction, I think that it is sort of distracting in a sense, because you are paying attention to, I mean, you're no longer immersed. It's supposed to immerse you more into the story, make you feel like you're there, but it kind of does the opposite. It pulls you out of it because it makes you feel
This is too
like one of our friends.
extreme.
Now, this is a part one of the 48 frames a second. We're coming from a director's critical standpoint,
Yeah.
but we're gonna have our friend Terry come on the show hopefully soon, and he's just an average moviegoer. He has no affiliation with any filmmaking whatsoever. He's just an average film goer. He loves movies. He goes to movies, but he doesn't go there to analyze them. He doesn't really. He's just a film buff.
Yeah.
And he we'll hear from him and what he felt. But so you don't think this is all biased and one-sided. I think that my problem with the 48 frames a second was, I think I probably could have tolerated more had it not been in 3D.
Yeah,
It
same here.
did the opposite. Instead of making things less strenuous on my eyes, I think it caused the exact opposite. It threw me the fuck off because it was just,
Yep.
I can't, like I said, it's very hard to explain, but like our friend, one of our friends said that it looked like they were on a set and he was just waiting for some guy with a boom mic to just come into the frame. It looks so cheap,
Yeah, it
and you could see
does.
the prosthetics and contact lenses and whatnot. Now, that said, 48 frames a second. It is innovative in terms of this is the first high budget movie to display at a high frame rate.
Right.
Now, we have people like James Cameron and Peter Jackson that are pushing the industry to get away from 24 frames a second. Even James Cameron is possibly, there is a significant possibility that he wants to shoot the next Avatar movie at 60 frames a second, which is, to me,
Crazy.
ridiculous. Like, I love James Cameron. I'm all for his innovation and I'm all for new things. But once again, you're telling me that all of a sudden, after so many years of associating high frame rate with, cheap VHS camcorders, DV camcorders, reality TV shows, et cetera, you're telling me that now my movies have to look that way. So in a sense, I have a feeling that, oh, well, I've been shooting the future for the longest time since I was a kid
Yeah,
at 60 frames a
seriously.
second, if that's the way you want to call it.
Yeah.
But that's the problem that, a lot of people say, well, it's new, it'll take some time to get used to. It's like, no, it's not. You will always associate it with cheaper stuff because you watch it every day on television.
Yeah, it's true.
Most shows are shot in high frame rate, at 60 frames, 30 frames a second.
Yep.
The only time you see 24 frames a second is pretty much in the theater or your local Blu-ray, and even that lately has been trumped by these stupid televisions doing the smoothing effect, which is which, I was guilty of being a fan of, but I think it's a gimmick more or less. And I when I sat down and thought, do I want my movie to look like this? Do I want my music videos to look? That's when I started turning it off, and I was like, appreciate the content as the director wanted to watch it. Am I against 48 frames a second, 60 frames a second for theater projection? No, I'm against the idea that these two people are trying to make it the standard for everybody, that the industry should move away from 24 frames a second. And I don't like that idea. I think that 48 or 60 frames a second should be a tool like choosing to shoot a movie in black
Yeah,
or
you should still
white,
have the choice, at
shooting the
least.
movie digital versus film, 4K versus 2K, et cetera, et cetera. Another tool in the bag of goodies of filmmaking. I think 48 frames a second would be good to shoot something like movies like Knocked Up, romantic comedies, stuff that doesn't have so much action in it. And stuff, especially comedies, I think would benefit more from a more realistic, higher frame rate. I think it would, as opposed to a movie like The Man of Steel or The Hobbit, which is heavily full of CGI, heavily prosthetics, makeup, to the point where you can tell everything's fake. And once that blur and that judder is gone, you see everything so clearly that the illusion, the there's something magical about 24 frames a second. Don't tell me there fucking isn't. The clarity that 48 frames a second provides is very, very good. It's just I don't think it should be for certain content. I think that it should be limited to certain content. And but if you are a director out there, by no means am I saying do not shoot 48 frames a second. If you want your movie that way, I would watch it that way as much as I could. I couldn't watch it in 3D. I'm gonna try and watch it if I can find it in high frame rate without the 3D. But if worse comes to worse, I'll try and get through it in 3D. My biggest problem is I take a lot of medication for panic attacks and certain disorders, and I'm afraid that I'm gonna have a seizure because of that, the way it's projected. It was the weirdest thing, and for the rest of the day, actually, I felt my brain felt wrong, like something felt like something snapped,
Yeah, it just felt
and
weird.
I was not expecting it. So, am I a fan of 48 frames a second? Yes, for certain content. I think 3D,
But not for the
not for
movie
3D.
theaters, the
See, my
movies.
biggest thing is, look, I'm championing 4K. I think the future is 4K. Full HD is good for now, but I think the future is 4 times that resolution. It's the clarity it brings. It will be more immersive. But you're talking about 4K, 48 frames a second, and 3D. Could you imagine that? That would just be like psychotically like too real, I think.
Yeah, it would be too real.
I'm more about 4K, keep the 24 frames a second, and keep the high frame rate for
Optional.
optional. Don't make it the standard.
Yeah.
As for Avatar being shot at 60 frames a second or 48 frames a second, I think with a movie that will obviously involve heavy CG and motion capture, I think that it will look more like a video game than anything. And I think that that motion blur and that judder is there to make things more real and to hide a lot of imperfections that, makeup and CG still hasn't reached that realism to the point where we can watch something that real and say, fuck, that looks real. No, that looks fake. We haven't
Yeah,
reached that point.
exactly.
So, yeah, I had to walk out of it. I did get my money back. I'm gonna try and go back again. I suggest, look, if you love it, I'm glad that you do, because that's the way Peter Jackson wanted you to watch it.
Yeah,
And
exactly.
I think that, you should watch things or make an attempt to watch things the way the director wanted you to watch. And then the 24 frames a second is out there. But once again, it's like those people that hate letterboxing and zoom in their picture on their television to get rid of the black bars. You're no longer watching the scope of what was intended. People that crank up their television with the colors and whatnot, you're not watching the content. There's a lot of people that spent a lot of time and energy in coloring the material you're watching, exposing it, getting it to look a certain way, and for you to be watching it in this weird vivid mode, or not watching the content per se the way you should be watching it, as it was intended to be watching it. It's really just, I think as a director, it saddens me that there's, you know, and it's split 50-50. I think half people know that movies should be watched a certain way. And because ultimately what you want to do is replicate the movie going experience. Go to your local theater, sit down, watch a movie, go back to your television and see what's wrong. Is it projecting the same warmth? Are the colors the same? Is it blasting you in the face? More than likely you'll find that something's wrong with your television. Some of you say, oh, well, but television is different from a movie screen. Not necessarily, because a lot of things are mastered and color timed with Panasonic plasmas and high def televisions. So in a sense, you know, you could dial in your you might even have a television right now that could be dialing to near perfection to what the director actually saw as he was editing or mastering the thing himself. So 48 frames a second for me, I think it should be an option, not moving towards a standard for everybody. I think that's kind of saying, like, to me, it feels like someone all of a sudden saying, you know, we should get away from color movies and go straight to black and white, because the human eye can perceive black and white images far better than color, and da 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 da. It just seems really, like I said, counterintuitive, more or less, you know, like backwards thinking, that all our movies should be seen now like home, like the frame rate of home videos or reality TV, which leaves a bad taste in my mouth. But by no means, you know, and I've read reviews. Some people love it. Some people hate it.
It's a love-hate thing. I mean, not everybody's going to like it.
It does pull you out. And you as a viewer, and reading a lot of reviews, I feel bad, because Peter Jackson, the technology does detract from trying to pay attention to what's going on or connect with the characters. But you can't make that connection, because it just... there's something funky about it. And especially that fast forward motion thing. That was weird.
Yeah, that was weird.
I can't decide. Like I said, it felt like I was watching some sort of Hobbit Benny Hill made for TV movie. So, as for the movie itself, I mean, what did you think of it? Was it...
the first 30 to 40 minutes, it's a bit slow. But once it takes off, it's actually pretty good.
Is it as good as The Fellowship of the Ring, or
honestly,
The Lord of the Ring?
No. The first three movies were better.
I think it's a mistake shooting The Hobbit in three movies, because the Hobbit book itself is much shorter than The Lord of the Rings. It's much more vast. I think Peter Jackson's just trying to hold on to this Lord of the Rings franchise and the studio to make money, because it will make money despite the high frame rate away. It's making tons of money, because there are there are fucking Lord of the Rings fans out there that will pay to see it.
Diehard fans, yeah, they're gonna watch it.
Yeah, but I think extending it over a three part movie, I think that's too much. I think it should just be a two movie, but you know.
We'll see what happens.
So, once again, don't get us wrong. They're, like I said, artists subjective. There'll be things that we like that you don't like, and there'll be things that you like that we don't like, but the message is try and watch things the way the director intended you to watch it. Whether it's
At least for the first time.
whether it's a television at home, high frame rate in the theater, Dolby Atmos, Dolby Digital Atmos, which or Atmos, which is the new certain theaters are this superior sound. Apparently, it's this new surround sound where there's speakers above. There's pretty much speakers everywhere, above on the ceiling, behind you, and it's called Dolby. I think it's Dolby Atmos. And I can't wait to hear that kind of surround sound. That's for an audiophile and a videophile. That'd be great. But yeah, I'm actually more interested in 4K technology, and I would like to see theaters and adopting that technology more in
Yeah,
Hollywood.
then the 40,
Because
yeah.
I think we should get away from full HD. I think we should push for. Sorry about that. I just had to check the timer. We're going a little long here. But anyway, I think we should push for 4K. And
Yeah,
I think
definitely.
that's, that's where not only will it make 3D and everything much more, I think, better. But I don't know. I love 4K. I mean, I've worked with 4K files recently because we're going to be, working with. I really don't want to say, but we're going to be working with Red cameras and check out Redefine Rentals. Go ahead and Google them. They provide you with the utmost selection of Red equipment for the Red Scarlett that you would need at a very affordable price. I think a lot of people lately have gotten caught up with, they feel like, okay, well, I can't achieve a certain image because I can't afford the camera. Well, who says you have to afford a camera? Renting seems
It's not
more.
always the camera. I mean, you can spend thousands of dollars on a camera and then shoot something, and it can still look like shit if you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, I think you should rent a camera, and buy a camera when you're ready to buy a camera. But the technology moving so fast, which literally there seems to be a camera coming out every 6 months now, and I think that the people ask me, oh well, I can't afford a Red Scarlet. Well, of course not everybody can afford a Red Scarlet. I can't afford a Red Scarlet,
Yeah, it's
especially a tricked out Red Scarlet. That's you're talking about a good 16 grand. But if you go with like Redefine Rentals, where they provide you with power source, rods, monitoring solutions, SSDs, map boxes, shoulder rigs, etc., for these cameras for the weekend for about $600 or individual pieces for very low prices. They're a really good company, so check them out for rentals. You don't have to be a millionaire to shoot 4K
No, you don't.
or really good resolution. Rent the camera, any camera, the C100, the C300, the Red Scarlet, the FS100, FS700,
Yeah.
the rent them when you need them. Most of the time, I mean, unless you're a constant professional, like you're shooting almost once a week, I think that to buy a camera and just have it sitting there and only pulling it out when you get jobs, I think, you shouldn't be spending $15,000 to $20,000 to buy a camera, especially if you're not using it really often. So I think you should rent it, save your money, put it into production, as put it into your production.
Yeah.
More than rent the camera for your shoot, and then the rest put the money into production. So we'll do a quick dirty little quick reviews of the Great Gatsby trailer. The second trailer came out, which is shot on Red cameras and looks beautiful. It's from the director of Romeo and Juliet, Moulin Rouge, Baz Luhrmann. I'm sure I'm pronouncing that wrong. Very great director. I really enjoyed a Romeo and Juliet. May not be for everybody, but it was really fucking crazy. He's got a very unique style. And the first trailer came out earlier this year, and it caught my attention. It's, you know, anybody that's read The Great Gatsby, The Great Gatsby is, you know, a book that's been out from F. Scott Fitzgerald, and it's a really good book. If you have a chance, pick it up, right? It's engaging. The Great Gatsby.
Yes, The Great Gatsby.
How's the book?
Absolutely. The
You're reading it
book.
for the first time, right?
Yes, the book is definitely very, how would I say it? Very intellectual, the way it's written. It's
But it captures your attention, right?
it really does. As much as I think it will when you watch it, you when you're reading it, it definitely catches your attention.
Now, there have
And
been
sucks you
movies
in.
made of The Great Gatsby before. But this one, starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Tobey Maguire,
Carey Mulligan,
Carey Mulligan, etc., has a hyper stylistic look of the 20s, which I think it works to create this environment. And the trailers were released with modern music set to a 20s backdrop. And recently there was a little bit of a controversy going, oh, well, how could you make a movie set in the 20s? In fact, even our friend Terry was like, I mean, he didn't feel that modern music should be in a period piece. And if you know this director, his choice of music, like if you watch Romeo and Juliet, I mean, that soundtrack is amazing. The choice of songs.
Yeah, they're chosen for a reason, you know, like he's chose some really good music for his movies, but they go with the movies. It's
Yeah, the
it has
choice
to
of
do with
the
it.
two major songs of the trailer, the second trailer, were Florence and the Machine, Bedroom Hymns, and a cover, I can't remember, of Happy Together, more rock cover. Can't remember the artist, sorry about that. But it went really well, I think. I don't know if it's gonna be modern music in the movie. I don't know if it's just the
Right,
trailer.
I don't
But
either.
it worked. I think it was a good contrast. I didn't pull me out
Yeah,
of
because the
the.
songs, you know, what they mean, it's the same meaning as the movie. So you put those together, that's what makes it fit.
Well,
No.
yeah, once again, art is subjective. Some people
Exactly.
will look at it from one end of the spectrum, and the other people will look at it from the other and be like, okay, I see where you're going with this, and I dig that, you know?
Yeah,
Like when you first
exactly.
watched like The Knight's Tale, you know, with Heath Ledger, you know, that had pretty much modern music in it. And in
Yeah.
a first take on that, you probably would think, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
This period piece with modern music. But the more you look at it, you see that, you know, it's somewhat of a comedy, somewhat lighthearted, and the music does kind of fit the movie somehow. It blends with it, in especially with the trailer of The Great Gatsby. The first one featured the Jack Wolf cover of what was that song? Love is Blindness. And it melded very organically
Yeah.
with the backdrop. And then these two songs from Florence and the Machine and Happy Together rock cover somehow kind of really just made the trailer pop for me.
It did pop. I mean, for me, it's just, it fits for me.
So you're excited to watch this movie,
Oh, I'm really excited to watch this.
especially after reading the
I
book.
mean, I was excited to read the book. Like when you told me about it, I was like, oh, I'm gonna go pick that
Yeah, I
up.
told her, look, man, I've pretty much read this thing. You know, if you're in high school or college, it's probably one of your curriculums you have to read. But it's a very interesting book. Very, there's a lot going on in there.
Yeah, and
Good,
for
good, good,
me,
good piece of
someone that likes
literature.
to read, yeah, it's definitely a good book.
Now, you've also been reading, catching up on your Walking Dead comics. You've been buying the volume books, which is pretty much
All the
all the
comics into
comics
one.
condensed into a series of books. And how does that differ, would you say, from the television show?
It's actually quite different. I mean, I think they took bits and pieces of it and then did some of their own stuff with it and decided to change it a bit.
So television show is more remixed, you would say?
Yeah. The comics, it's a bit different.
Which I
Things
think,
happen to different people. It's
am
you
I
just have
right
to
or
read
wrong?
it.
Does it feel, it sounds to me like it feels like you would be able to pick up the comic and go through that story and be surprised by their twists
Yeah.
and still watch the television show knowing, okay, I'm gonna be surprised still because not everything is
Yeah.
translated the
That would have
same
been the best
way.
way to
So
do
it's not
it.
a straight to, because I know that Daryl and
There is no Daryl and Merle.
there's no Daryl Merle in the comic book, and the character of Tyrese is early
Early
on
on.
in the comic book, and
Yep.
then Dale has, fucking spoilers. Dale has a relationship with the blonde chick,
Andrea.
Andrea, and Dale doesn't die in this one, and
No,
neither
he's
does
alive.
the
And
kid, the girl. What's the little girl's name?
Sophia.
Sophia. She's not.
She's not dead. She's in there. Also, Maggie and Glenn, they're still together at one point. If you guys follow it on the show, they all left the farm. Well, in the book, Maggie and Glenn stay behind with Herschel at the farm, and everybody leaves and finds a prison, but then they go back to get them because they think it'd be safer. So it's like it's
So it's pretty good. It's really good.
it's really good.
I
Like,
gotta
I love
pick it up and
books.
start reading. I mean, I know a little bit about it, but
It's really good.
I think I should probably read pick it up and read it. Now, real quick, we're going a little long here. We're about an hour or so into this. I don't want to go too long. We're gonna wrap it up with Finding Nemo 3D Blu-ray review. Great
Oh, great
colors.
3D.
The transfer, come on, any Disney transfer, they always take their time.
Yeah, they do.
If you were to watch the conversion of the 3D Finding Nemo in 3D, awesome.
Yeah.
Up in 3D, okay, not as necessary. Not as I
Right.
wasn't as wowed. I can pride
You
probably
could take
watch.
it and you get it for
I'd probably be
the
50% of the time watch it in 2D.
Yeah.
Now, we watched Pitch Perfect yesterday,
That was
and
funny.
that
It
was
was
a really
good.
funny movie. You should check that out. I like that more than the Bridesmaids one.
Yeah.
And some female comedies. I think that Pitch Perfect was, I found myself laughing and enjoying it more. Don't knock it. Give it a try.
Yeah, it's actually pretty good.
And Resident Evil Retribution 3D. Now, okay, let's get this out of the way. Resident Evil movies are shut off your brain, expect no good story, and just watch a lot of ass kicking. It's like
It's just like
that piece of,
Expendables, you know?
it's like that piece of chocolate you know you shouldn't have after dinner. It's just like, that's my secret indulgence. Like, I watch Resident Evil movies and I know what to expect. They're almost kind of exploitation films, like
Right.
a campy grindhouse kind of.
Yeah,
You know,
exactly.
where they insist upon themselves, especially the new 3D ones, where it's like, yeah, it's gonna come at you. Yeah, it's gonna. There's. It was good. I was entertained. I
No, I
was.
was too.
I think they're visually stunning. I like the gags. I think it
I mean,
works.
if you nitpick at it technically, then yeah, you're gonna
Yeah, there's
see.
major plot. I mean, my suggestion to you, if you watch any Resident Evil movie,
Take it for
shut
really what
off
it
your
is,
brain. It,
yeah.
there's really no story. It's just an action. If you watching Mia Jovovich just fucking kicking ass, hot chicks kicking ass, zombies, monsters. It's not really a horror movie. It's action packed. Each one of them is, and I enjoyed it. I know a lot of people don't like that kind of thing, but you know.
Yeah, but
Before we leave. Star Trek Into Darkness trailer.
oh, it's so
Amazing.
good.
Amazing. I
It's
loved
just so sad we had to wait.
yeah, so sad. And the Man of Steel second trailer was amazing. And the reason I like it is because every time I watch it, it's like no other Superman movie or anything
Yeah, it looks
related to
real
Superman. It
different.
looks very different. It's definitely got some great minds behind it. You know, you got, I mean, come on, you got Christopher Nolan
Diane Lane,
producing it. You got Diane Lane, Kevin Costner, Henry Cavill as Superman. You got Russell Crowe as
Russell Crowe is
Jor-El.
the, yeah.
It's the gamut of people, and the director of 300 and Watchmen. Oh, fuck, I
Yeah.
forgot his name. Zack Snyder. Sorry about that. Zack Snyder. Christopher Nolan producing it. David S. Goyer helping. It's
Yep.
just amazing. So it just looks really good, and hopefully we're finally gonna get a Superman
A
movie.
really good one, yeah.
Yeah, so, well, that was IKP's Digital Film Podcast. Thanks for joining us. Sorry we took your time, but hopefully you found some of this stuff interesting and innovative. We'll try and.
Thanks for your patience. I hope you guys still keep following us. I'm back, so now that you guys know what was going on, I should be in the podcast a bit more and talk about more stuff. So
All right, yeah, and, we'll be back, I guess. Like I said, we'll try and get our friend Terry in for the 48 frames a second
to
review
get his
from an
input,
average, normal
moviegoer,
moviegoer.
yeah.
That way, you don't think it's a biased opinion. In fact, I want to hear his opinion. But anyway, we'll try and do that next time. And thanks for listening. And go ahead and subscribe to us. Hit that subscribe button. Podomatic or iTunes, and visit us on Facebook. Just
If you
type
have
in Impulse
any
Kitty Productions.
comments, questions, let us know.
Yeah, type in Impulse Kitty Productions on Google, and you'll find our Vimeo page. I mean, we're pretty much the only Impulse Kitty Productions out there at KP.
Yeah.
So, thanks for listening, guys.
Thanks.